Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, and with me today is my special guest, Stephen McIntosh, author of Evolution's Purpose, which is a look at how everything is subject to evolution, including matter, life, and human culture. Hi, Stephen, and welcome to Healing From Within.
Hi, Cheryl. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
You know, Stephen, one of the main goals of this radio show is to share my personal view and that of most of my guests, that it is through the scientific and spiritual exploration of the origins of life that we may come to explain who we are and how we are evolving in relation to the universe. This knowledge allows us to clearly see that the true goal of expansion or evolution is an ever-widening appreciation of our inner life experience and at the same time our physical world. It is my belief that science and spirituality both seek to answer age-old questions, and many people believe these disciplines are so very different when in actuality they can work towards the same goals. And in today's discussion, you and I may begin to integrate these distinct approaches as cooperative and meaningful and begin to recognize evolution's true purpose and how we can realize our growing need to recognize beauty, truth, and goodness, both personally and collectively as part of our human development. Steve, let me share a little of your personal history for our listeners. Stephen is a leader in the integral philosophy movement and currently works as a founding partner of the New Social Policy Foundation, which is the Institute for Cultural Evolution. Previously, Stephen was a founder of the consumer products company Now and Zen, practicing law with a large American law firm, working as an executive with Celestial Seasonings Tea Company, and an Olympic class bicycle, interested in Olympic class bicycle racing. Steve's first book was Integral Consciousness and the Future of Evolution. You know, Steve, that sounds like Leonardo da Vinci, of a Vitruvian man, and I feel that way just listening to you, and science, art, and culture coming together. That is where I believe we're going. So, Stephen, you mentioned your interest in quantum physics, self-organizing systems, and the study of consciousness that began when you were only a teenager, and you eventually became acquainted with a new form of philosophy known as integral philosophy. Please tell us something about these interests and about your new book, Evolution's Purpose.
Sure. Well, you know, I wasn't raised in any kind of spiritual tradition. You know, my father was an atheist. My mother was agnostic. But beginning around 12, I became very interested in the counterculture. This was 1972, sort of the tail end of the 60s. And I could tell that something was going on. There was like a renaissance in history, and I was too young to participate. I felt left out. So as soon as I was old enough, I wanted to learn more about this countercultural new kind of freedom that was so attractive to me. And at that time, as the 60s proper were sort of giving way to the 70s and the integration of many of the accomplishments of the counterculture, one of the things that was emerging at the time was what's best described now as progressive spirituality. And progressive spirituality is an eclectic mix of all kinds of different forms of spirituality. It involves, of course, the rediscovery of the wisdom teachings of the East. It involves a recognition of ancient, say, shamanic teachings that are, you know, prior to any great world religion. It involves a kind of exploration of entheogenic experiences, and it used to be called the New Age, but that's kind of a term of derision now, and it's not simply the more entertainment oriented elements. It, especially in the 70s, there was a lot of intellectual foment, a lot of interest, especially in the intersection of science and spirituality. You know, there were two landmark books that really kind of introduced me to this area of science and spirituality within the context of progressive spirituality. And this was, the first one was Fritjof Capra's book, The Tao of Physics,
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, although in many ways, given what we've learned and discovered since then, can be seen as somewhat outdated, it was the first book, at least the popular breakthrough book, to really show how the leading edge of science was kind of coming around to and validating many of the truths that have been known by mystics for thousands of years. And of course,
Stephen, integral philosophy, if I'm clear on this, is a study of evolution that emphasizes the evolution of consciousness as a central factor. And this idea demonstrates that there's a connection between the personal development of each person's values and character, and also within the development of human history. So, Stephen, you suggest that many people have received the economic and educational benefits of living in the developed world, that would be you and I and every guest that's been on this show, now feel a sense of personal responsibility. And we want to help improve the human condition and realize that this is a collective, there is a collective need to work cooperatively. So can you tell us something about the 21st century challenges and the way we must deal with these issues?
Sure. Well, you know, fast forward beyond the 70s to my interest in science and spirituality from the beginning. This led to my involvement with Ken Wilber's Integral Institute. Ken Wilber is an author who, in the 90s, really kind of revived this branch of philosophy known as integral philosophy, which we can trace back to many of the great philosophers of history. The core element of integral philosophy is this looking to evolution as a universal truth, both in science and history, as a way of getting at what spirit is all about. And so to answer your question, one of the ways that integral philosophy does this is it helps us understand the world with evolutionary eyes. We can begin to see the problems in the world from an evolutionary perspective, which helps us appreciate that the solution to almost every problem really involves the evolution of consciousness. This kind of deeper understanding of the evolution of consciousness itself, how consciousness is part of this larger evolutionary unfolding of the universe, and that evolution is, in a sense, the creation of intrinsic value. It's been unfolding, you know, it's been building on itself, creating more and more value. And we're actually agents of evolution. We've been enlisted by this evolutionary process to kind of to bring our purposes to its purposes. You know, we've been given purpose as evolutionary creatures so that we might participate in this process of evolution, both our own evolution, our own personal growth, and the improvement of the human condition, which, you know, is obvious. The more you awaken spiritually, the more you become sensitive to the
Absolutely.
Problems of the world.
Yeah. So I like that you just said we're enlisted. So we are enlisted to work beyond all these environmental degradations and nuclear proliferation and the exhaustion of our natural resources, overpopulation, hunger, and poverty. And I'm on the East Coast and just went through Hurricane Sandy. I think for many people, this may be an awakening of their inner being to know that it's time to progress and to work for what's really important, not only the material things we've been so fortunate to have in this country. I mean, we just had an election, a very complicated election. And I believe these things are happening as part of evolution to help us move along a little more rapidly. Now, you say evolution is universal, and that includes all forms of evolution, cosmological, biological, and cultural. Many of our people may not understand those terms. So can you give us a short definition of these three forms of evolution?
Sure. Well, it's now become well-established science that not only matter and energy, but time and space itself began 13.7 billion years ago, which is about three times older than the Earth itself. You know, it had a distinct and dramatic beginning. This is not just a theory. You know, the Big Bang, as it's called, is supported by four different kinds of observational evidence. And if you go on Wikipedia, you can read all about the fact that this is really firm science. And this begins the process of emergence, right? The Big Bang is the first emergence. And then evolution builds on itself, whereas something more keeps coming from something less. But even though you know, we begin with the Big Bang, we can recognize three distinct types of development, right? The evolution of stars and planets and atoms and molecules that occurs in what's called cosmological evolution. then a kind of a second Big Bang occurs, a kind of the emergence of a new domain of evolution that's unlike anything that's come before, and this, of course, is the emergence of life. Life brings a new law of physics in the universe because living things strive to survive and reproduce. Matter doesn't strive, but life does, and this is why it can't be reduced to matter. And then that creates a new domain of evolution, which itself progresses through emergences. And then we come to what really is best understood as a third Big Bang, the inauguration of a third kind of evolution that can't be reduced to the other two. Just like life emerges from matter, but is more than matter, the evolution of consciousness and culture in humans, the freedom, the free will, the self-consciousness that humans have, inaugurates a new kind of evolution, which is now evidenced by our global civilization. Right? That's not just more biological evolution. It's a distinct emergence of a whole new domain.
All right.
We have these three kinds of evolution.
Stephen, this is you mentioned consciousness. So now, consciousness can evolve in a wide variety of ways, and you say that this progressive advance is not random, accidental, or meaningless, and has been building for billions of years. So let's talk a little bit about this progressive state of consciousness. What is it really when we talk about that? Maybe people think it's the mind. They think it's learning facts and figures and working in the material realm of life. But it's much more than that. So what would you say about that?
Sure. Well, a simple definition of consciousness is the interior of our experience, right? The inside of, mm-hmm. of what we know about us, our feelings, thoughts, experiences, intentions. It's kind of a common sense definition of what our subjective presence really is. And this subjective presence, this frame of reality, which gives us a sense of self, this evolves. It depends on our brains, but it's also independent of our brains because our consciousness can evolve without our brains evolving. You know, in other words, the brain, human brain, may have gone through some forms of evolution in the last 10,000 years, but human consciousness in that same period has grown by leaps and bounds in amazing ways that can't just be reduced to the changes in the brain. So consciousness shows an independence in its evolution,
mm-hmm.
and of course it achieves that independence through the evolution of culture and the evolution of agreements and the evolution of knowledge and experience and wisdom. So human consciousness evolves, but it evolves most, it has a structure in how it evolves. It's not just a seamless continuum, just like biological evolution has a whole structure, you know, discovered by Linnaeus and charted by the science of biology. The evolution of consciousness and culture also has a structure. And that's what integral philosophy has been working on for the last 100 years, is uncovering these structures of evolution in consciousness, even though they're not visible in the same way that biological organisms are visible.
No, they're energetic in their presence and connection to perhaps energy universally. I think right now people are very interested in raising their consciousness, and it can be raised, I think, by increasing empathy, as you said in your book,
mm-hmm.
and as I believe, and compassion, and by cultivating knowledge, understanding, and basic conditions of forgiveness, and building, this is very important right now, we did just go through an election, building political goodwill so we can be determined to achieve social and environmental justice. So
mm-hmm.
consciousness is working towards these ends, and so is evolution at the same time.
Right, but to get at what this evolution is and how we can get more people, right, to be more forgiving and compassionate, how can we help the world become more evolved in their consciousness, that involves understanding how consciousness itself evolves, and it evolves through these structures I'm talking about, these worldviews. And so each worldview defines what's beautiful, true, and good. It's like a system, and people have their consciousness, whether they are aware of it or not, largely embedded in these worldview systems. So outside those systems is really the key to evolution of consciousness from an integral perspective.
Okay. You mentioned, I believe, the three terms, modernism, traditionalism, and postmodernism. Those are the worldviews that have been the structure for the development of human civilization. And I love the way you set up a chart in the book that showed the cultural contributions and examples and types of organization, leaders who fell into these categories, and even potential pathologies or problems that we might have when we're too much into any one system. So perhaps the merging of several of these systems might be a good way to help with higher consciousness, but first we have to understand what they're about. We are right now in the postmodern postmodern.
Some of us. It's still a minority in American culture.
It's a minority.
Yeah, probably 20%, right, of the populace makes meaning at this level defined by integral as a defined term, postmodern. We might call that, you know, progressive or countercultural. It's not just liberal. You know, the idea of liberal and conservative, that's still all within the modernist worldview. That's the mainstream. But those who for example, are able to gain the gifts of progressive spirituality, for example, are typically making meaning at a postmodern level. You know, they can see the problems with the mainstream more completely. But that level by itself, while I've been, you know, a loyal member of this postmodern countercultural worldview for 30 years, I can also see, I'm beginning to see its limitations. You know, we kind of expect the world's just going to wake up and realize that we're all one people. And that's a nice thought, but that's not the way evolution works. You know, and if we're going to take responsibility for making the world a better place, we can't just rely on, you know, some miraculous awakening occurring, you know, at some event, you know, in the near future. We actually have to appreciate how progressive culture itself, it contributes to the polarity.
You know, Stephen, I think almost every guest on this show, and I've done over 55 shows, would fit into this defining stage of postmodernism. Mm-hmm. And many, like yourself, as a sensitive young child, at a very young age, being aware of your inner possibilities and the world as it was functioning, perhaps at a level that was maybe too slow or a little archaic. Mm-hmm. You know, they talk about indigo children. Really, indigo children are just intuitives or sensitives or healers or people who have a higher level of vision for possibilities. And yes, we are about 25% of the population, but we are at this time right now affecting a great number of people, and the conditions worldwide are helping to make people realize that by using all the structures, merging the best of everything, we have a way to move forward at this time. So let's go on with something else here. What is a newer understanding of evolution and emergence that has emerged over the last few decades? I mean, you've been studying this that long, and this is really right now a very new field. And can you just tell us something a little bit more about that?
Sure. The new picture, really, of evolution is, as we discussed earlier, the fact that everything is evolving, that it's not just a matter of biology. It's not just a sort of Darwinian conception of descent with modification of species. That's, of course, part of evolution. But the bigger picture of evolution is that matter itself evolves, and not only does biology evolve, but also evolution's occurring within us. In other words, to be human is to know what it feels like to be evolution happening, right? We can feel the impulses and the purposes of evolution within us because we are agents of evolution. We are the expression of the interests of evolution. And the very structure of our bodies kind of proves that, because we embody all these sequence of emergences. And hydrogen was the first, the debris of the Big Bang. The universe was basically just hydrogen, simplest atom, a little bit of helium. And our bodies are mostly made out of hydrogen, because hydrogen is the main ingredient of water, and water is the main ingredient of the body. So if you look at what we're made of all the sequences from the beginning that have led to where we are now, and we embody those sequences not only in our physical bodies, but in our consciousness itself. In other words, we are making meaning using all the achievements of our ancestors that have evolved these various worldviews. These have contributed to how we can see the world now.
Yes, and so consciousness includes thoughts, intentions, values, and memories, and very importantly, a sense of self. You know, it's been my personal search for trying to understand higher consciousness and to know myself and others more compassionately without ego or mind, and to have a deeper sense of value, beauty, and love for life. Just for life. And I think in acting this way as caring, compassionate beings, I believe we must emerge beyond this ego mind to find purpose in developing beauty, as you say in the book, I love these words, beauty, truth, and goodness of our inner being or energetic essence or a soul or the reason for life? And that would take us to a very interesting question, wouldn't it?
Indeed.
About life and life beyond this possible physical life. So does this spiritual interpretation suggest an afterlife or the continuity of consciousness?
I believe it does. In the book, I present the philosophy as trying to be as agreeable to as many different spiritual orientations as possible. You know, I don't presume belief in an afterlife in the reader. But toward the end of the book, I offer some spiritual interpretations that go beyond the philosophy. And there I conclude that the universe doesn't really make sense unless there's life after death. In other words, that all of this effort to produce consciousness in humans that can transcend our biology points to a larger purpose of our transcendence of our biology, you know, beyond this life, in the ongoing evolution of consciousness in an afterlife as we continue to grow spiritually. You know, this is something that is beyond the argumentations that we can take from science. In other words, if we're going to survive this body in an afterlife, it's hard to get there from a purely naturalistic interpretation. But you can get to the beautiful, the true, and the good, and the evolution of consciousness and the meaning of life. You can get a long way in our understanding of what the spiritual teachings of evolution really are, by purely looking at the facts of evolution. I mean, that's one of the beauties of evolution, is that it's a spiritual teaching. It's a revelation properly understood. And it can kind of help us transcend the limitations of progressive spirituality by going beyond just polite spiritual pluralism, right? If we want to, you know, one of the ways that progressive spirituality achieves its advance is by recognizing there's all these different beautiful paths to spirit, and we can let them all into our culture and appreciate them all and have an eclectic understanding of spiritual truth. But that, you know, leaves us bereft, you know, in comparing excellence. And evolution is a yardstick that can help us compare various forms of spiritual teaching.
Well, that's what I liked about the book, because you showed the history from Plato and Socrates, who were seekers of the inner being or the essence of physical and spiritual life. And then from that, you went on toward the end of the book to show that if we want to discover evolution's purpose, we need only look inside ourselves, because our purpose are its purposes. So our ability to grow and continually make things better seems to be predicated on the pursuit of both self-improvement and the giving of ourselves to the larger community, and a degree of balance is the ideal. But, you know, this reminds me of a new Tom Hanks movie that I just saw, Cloud Atlas.
I've heard about the movie. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
It's quite interesting, very complicated, and it takes a while. Towards the middle, toward the end, you start to see where they're going with all these concepts. But what it was about was people connected by their soul energy throughout different times, and to help others realize that the actions and thoughts or negative effects that we have on people, kindness or negativity, are creating our next life experience. And that's part of evolution, too, and to help the world population know that we will continue to go through certain forms of change until we incorporate within ourselves these higher qualities. So I found that very interesting, and I think it goes along with some of the concepts in your book also. So let's get back to something else for a minute. As a result of the studies of science, we know that evolution is a universal process, and it encompasses and unites the domains of what you were talking about before, cosmological, biological, and cultural development. So what can we add to this equation at the present time to give us the purpose of evolution? And this is the heart of your inquiry, the purpose of evolution in its totality.
Sure. Well, part of the way we get to purpose is we begin to understand progress. We begin to understand that evolution hasn't just been a random walk. It's not just a mechanistic or meaningless occurrence. It's been producing value. Something more keeps coming from something less, again and again and again. And this aiming at value points to a progress that is unmistakably purposeful. In other words, there's a rising flow of creativity in the universe, and this creativity is moving toward intrinsic value. The great integral philosopher Alfred North Whitehead actually defined evolution as an increase in the capacity to experience what's intrinsically valuable. You know, it's kind of a consciousness-centric definition. You know, the experience of value is really where evolution is headed, and it's not only experiencing it, it's making it in the process, right? When humans come into the world, we bring the beautiful, the true, and the good into the world, and so this is how evolution progresses, and this is how we can begin to kind of glean its spiritual message by seeing that, that it is moving toward this greater state of perfection and that we're called to help decide what perfection's all about. And that's what we add to the universe. And, you know, if the universe is conceived as something that's non-dual and existentially perfect to begin with, what possible good could the finite universe do? What is this evolution all about? Why is it occurring? Well, my premise, my assertion in the book, is that it's moving. The purpose of evolution is to bring a dimension of perfection that's experienced and chosen freely by the creatures of evolution themselves. So that's how we're enlisted.
And I think it will help us to solve many social and political problems, and that by coming to see the spiritual aspects of evolution, the purpose of evolution may point to the realities of freedom and these values of goodness, truth, and beauty, and also our soul survival. I want to thank you, Stephen McIntosh, for a most thoroughly, intellectually, and well-documented search into the philosophy and journey from prebiotic forms of life right up through the development of human consciousness and our global civilization, for exploring evolution and its many purposes, for understanding the nature of our physical and our inner world experience. And for more information and to purchase Stephen McIntosh's book, Evolution's Purpose, go to
stevemcintosh.com. Yes.
stevemcintosh.com. Okay, so in summarizing today's discussion on evolution, we have offered science's growing recognition of the phenomenon of emergence, which ties together all forms of evolution, and we have suggested that traditional philosophies can no longer fully explain the fullness of evolution and our human search for individual growth and world evolution. Progressive postmodernists of today will carry their core values of beauty, truth, and goodness as personal qualities emerging in so many of us today, and help bring more conservative modernists and traditionalists of the past into a progressive agreement, greater freedom, and political and social practices leading to a more unified and cooperative world population. That is the hope. That is the goal. That is the dream. I am Cheryl Glick, host for Healing From Within. Please go to the radio show page of my website, CherylGlick.com, to hear authors and leaders in the field of holistic health, spirituality, the arts and education, and other progressive visionaries speak of personal and world transformation.